This is the International Education Marketing Podcast, a roundup of news stories and how they might impact marketing and recruiting for the international education sector.
Welcome to the International Education Marketing Podcast. I'm your moderator, Daniel Chatham, and today with me are our contributors.
Carrie Naumova.
And Elizabeth Amthor.
Thank you both for being here. I'm excited to hear what you brought to share and your interpretations of it. So Carrie, why don't you start us off?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for having us. And so the title of my article, Grand Canyon University Fined for Misleading Students About Doctoral Program Costs. And basically what the article is talking about is the Department of Education fined the GCU for $37.7 million, which is a pretty substantial fine, and for allegedly misleading the students, thousands of students, about their true cost of the doctoral programs that they offer. And basically, the university claims that these programs cost somewhere between $40,000 to $49,000, but 98% of students actually ended up paying more by 10 to 12K. And the reason for that is because the students needed to take classes, so-called these continuation courses, to complete their dissertation requirements. And so the university's response was actually pretty defensive, in my opinion. First of all, they defended themselves by pointing that they did, in fact, disclose all of these things in their fine print disclosures in that are a part of some of their enrollment agreements. But the Department of Education rejected that defense, saying that that is not a good enough explanation for the big lies that they're making about their true cost of their programs. And also because these fine print disclosures are such long and complicated documents that it is not immediately available to the student's eye. But what is available, what is immediately available to the student's eye is what they're advertising, which was that $40,000 to $49,000. Going back to their defensive response, to the university's defensive response, the article actually provides a link to the university's response, and I looked into it a little bit, and what I found interesting was the language that they used. It's this really defensive and kind of aggressive language to defend themselves. And right under the title of the university's article, you know how there's like a sentence that that kind of leads you to information, prepares you for the information that is about to come in the article. So it states, federal officials coordinating efforts with frivolous accusations in order to bring harm to the largest Christian university in the country. So I thought that was really interesting. And they also, so in the university's article, they also mentioned that they do have calculators for all of their programs. But because bachelor's and master's programs are way more set in the sense of which courses the students must take, whereas the doctoral programs are way more kind of tailored to the students individually. And that's what makes it hard to predict the true cost of the program. And also the university claims that it is being unfairly targeted by government agencies. And so also going back to the article of my choosing from higher ed, they also describe the previous lawsuit in there. And basically, long story short, because of switch in management, back in 2018, I believe, the Department of Education started to consider GCU as a for-profit university. GCU did not like that and still does not like that because obviously they have to comply with stricter regulations. So in 2021, the university, the Grand Canyon University, sued the Department of Education. But the federal judge stood with the Department of Education, but the GCU appealed. So that's kind of the story with that, just the background. And basically, so the university states that these investigations, and they think that these investigations are part of a larger agenda against them. And so these are kind of some of the facts that that the article has.
Thanks, Carrie. That's fascinating to me. It raises a lot of interesting questions about how we pass information on to prospective students, how we put forward our best outcomes, as well as cost data. So I hope that we'll dig into that on the other side.
Absolutely.
First, though, let's hear from Elizabeth about her article, and then we'll have a conversation on the other side.
Yeah, thank you. So I read about sort of the changing landscape of English proficiency tests in edX Live. So most people are probably familiar with IELTS and TOEFL as like the two main English proficiency tests that people around the world have used in order to effectively gain access to English language institutions or opportunities in a lot of the English speaking countries around the world. I guess because they've had sort of a duopoly, they haven't been pushed to, you know, innovate or change very much, though they have introduced, you know, internet-based tests in the last decade. But there are two new challengers. I guess you could call them. Duolingo has gotten into the assessment business or the testing business, and so has Pearson. And so these two tests are now sort of introducing some new opportunities. I think it raises some really interesting issues or questions about accessibility. For example, previously you had to go to an IELTS or TOEFL testing site. And if you didn't live near one, that either meant you couldn't go, you just couldn't take it, or you had to expend a lot of resources in order to get to that site in order to have access to this other opportunity in education. But the Duolingo test, for example, is available on demand 24/7, which immediately opens it up to a lot more potential test takers. But these tests are only as useful, they're only useful if institutions are willing to accept what they're measuring, right? And I was kind of blown away by how many institutions are currently accepting the Duolingo test as an alternative to TOEFL and IELTS. This article said over 4,500 institutions around the world are accepting the Duolingo test, including like Stanford and Columbia. And Pearson also had not quite as many institutions, but over 3,000, among those Harvard Business School and Yale. So when institutions with that kind of reputation and of that caliber are accepting this kind of test, I think that gives it a lot of credibility and maybe signals that more people or more institutions will adopt that as an alternative to TOEFL and IELTS. Pearson is already being used by the Canadian government for citizenship purposes and Australian, UK, and New Zealand governments for visa and study purposes. So it's not just education, but also governments that are sort of getting on this. Yeah, so I think it's interesting to see how sort of that interplay between like acceptability and accessibility will sort of play out in the next, you know, few years.
Thanks very much for that recap. With this Duolingo test, I'll admit to having not seen it come online as a widely accepted test as early as it was. It came to my attention over the past year as a widespread test while I was coaching an undergraduate applicant from Turkey. Of the 12 schools in the United States that she's applying to, 25% of them accept the Duolingo test, including Caltech. So let's open this up a little bit. What do you think, first of all, are there any commonalities? Are there any similar takeaways from these two articles? They're obviously very different articles.
Yeah, one thing that sort of jumped out at me was the idea of perception or reputation. Like Carrie was talking about the sort of defensive response of the university to the lawsuits or the accusations from the Department of Education. And I think maybe more than the lawsuit, the way they respond, the way they're positioning themselves is something that potential students will see and form an opinion about. And similarly, sort of the shifting reputation of, for example, the Duolingo test. Yeah, honestly, I didn't see that coming either. I thought it was just a game, sort of a language learning game that you could play. And I didn't know that they were getting into this this sort of market with assessment. But I think they're gaining credibility. They're getting a good reputation if schools like Harvard or Yale are accepting those scores. That can make it more attractive to students who are looking at their options when they're applying.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like, in my case, right, the Grand Canyon University is receiving such negative publicity that it would potentially drive away the students. Whereas in the case of Duolingo, which was also surprising, it was surprising to hear, given that, so in our program, TESOL and TFL, you know, Duolingo is mentioned like this, how to say it, maybe not the best way, let's just say, to learn a language, right? And there's all these flaws in how they program everything to learn a language. But because all of these other big name universities are accepting their assessment plan, and like Elizabeth mentioned, there is that shift towards something better, right? So this is a positive news, whereas the Grand Canyon is kind of receiving this negative light.
Yeah, I also think that like I can look at it as these institutions that are choosing to accept these different kinds of tests in order to attract a wider applicant pool. They're competing with each other for these students, but there's also these testing companies now. IELTS and TOEFL have had like together a monopoly on testing, but now they have to compete with Pearson and Duolingo and attract people to take their test, because they get money from that. That's their business model, right? So if it's cheaper and more accessible to take the Duolingo test than it is to take TOEFL or IELTS, how are they gonna, you know, they have the sort of prestige that they've developed, or like the name recognition that they've developed, but how long will that be enough? I'm curious.
No, that's actually very interesting. You've brought up now the third dimension of competition, or the third layer of competitive groups. Students are being competed for by universities. And so a student who has one of those tests or doesn't want to take one of those tests has choices. The schools are trying to position themselves to be either perceived as more applicant friendly or more accessible or less behind the times, if, say, there's a first mover advantage to being folks that are out there. And then, yeah, that third layer of competition between the test organizations. We really hadn't thought about that, but that's a good point too. And they don't have a lot of competition, as you pointed out.
And also what came to mind as Elizabeth was speaking was that, for example, in the article about Duolingo, this might actually prompt the students, because of this connection to all these reputable and big names of universities that are accepting this assessment, this might prompt the students and other stakeholders to not do any further research on the credibility of this assessment, right? And then whereas the opposite, it's the opposite. In my case, in the article about the Grand Canyon University, where in this case, the students are probably going to be more prompted to do more research about what are the actual financial costs of the attendance, right? And if is everything disclosed? What is not disclosed?
Yeah, I think there's actually quite a strong parallel between these two articles. They're both about reputation, one being a positive step and one being to protect against a negative impact. But if we go back in time chronologically, the GCU motive, if you think about it, could have been to be able to portray the lowest possible cost. Why? Because it's a competitive environment. So to take out $10,000 or $12,000 worth of cost and shift it into a different category, kind of like when you buy tickets for a concert and there's the face value, but then you have the surcharge for buying it online.
Mm-hmm.
As a consumer, it really bothers me that we are fragmenting our pricing and putting things out into different fees and not being transparent and not having the full price available as a consumer. That bothers me. And as a parent of a future college student, I really just want to know, how much does it all cost? I need to know that. It's a really important decision-making data point. So anyway, going back to the commonalities, one of them is trying to gain an unfair competitive advantage in the marketplace, and the other is trying to either gain a competitive advantage or to keep up with the trends so that they don't lose a competitive position for those same students.
Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts or observations?
The only other thing that came to mind when I was reading this was sort of the fact that other kinds of admissions tests have been on the way out in higher ed. Like during the pandemic, we saw a lot of schools not require the SAT or ACT anymore. And in looking at some other sort of intensive English programs recently, I've seen one thing that they offer is a waiver of the TOEFL or the IELTS if you complete some of their English courses before enrolling, or as like a condition of enrollment. So another place where the student wouldn't have to take a test, and that might be attractive for them depending on what their background and their goals are. So just how assessment in general is, I guess, much more dynamic than I used to take for or used to assume.
Yeah, and then for my article about the GCU, another thing that comes to mind is how some students, if they see this article and they see this news piece, might not want to be associated with that university because of this huge reputation damage. And that could be regardless of the outcome, right? Like even if the university does defend itself, because that information is already out there, this could be pretty damaging for the business of the university overall, and probably for a long period of time, in my opinion, I would assume.
Yeah, I agree with you. I guess the question, though, is how long and how severe is the impact? Likewise, on the language proficiency test, how long will this set of test options be available before something else comes along? Yeah, these trends are here. They're there. These are not uncommon business practices on either side. Well, with that, we'll come to a close. Thank you both so much for participating. I enjoyed the articles and the conversation, and hope the listeners did too.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Likewise.